Hello and welcome along to the RTÉ Rugby Podcast. It is the 25th of June and we're into the thick of a Lions tour. Andy Farrell's squad are down under preparing for the first of 9 games in Australia, starting with the Western Force in Perth on Saturday morning. A 28-24 defeat to Argentina in their game at the Aviva Stadium on Friday night. More on that later. Bernard Jackman and Johnny Holland are with me this week. And fellas, I'm going to dive right in to this week's podcast with what I think is already a contender for quote of the Lions Tour 2025. This is Dan Sheehan talking about his relationship with his new teammate Ellis Genge. It's mad how fast you can go from despising people to hanging around with them and going for coffee. It's probably just that rugby blokes are good blokes and you can turn on the hatred when you want it. But getting to know people has been one of the most enjoyable parts of the last few weeks. Genge would be a good one. He's obviously a passionate, animated player for England and someone who we as Ireland would consider a talisman. And in an Irish jersey, we'd need to target. Now he's one person you enjoy having on the team. He's a funny bloke off the pitch. Everyone loves him. You can see the passion he brings to meetings on the pitch and in the scrum. He's very real and says it how it is. He's definitely someone that surprises you. He's not a D-head. I'm not saying the full word because it's a family show, you know. This is my favourite bit of Lions content every single tour. Like every player interview that comes up, the stock questions are, who are you rooming with and who has kind of surprised you that you've actually enjoyed getting to know? Because it's one of the few times I think players actually do let their guard down and take part in the fun a little bit. And it just prompted me to wonder, who was your Ellis Genge during your career? Someone that you played against a few times, you absolutely hated the guts out of, but once you met them off the pitch, or once maybe you ended up playing with them, that things turned and you grew to love them. Long pause.
Yeah, mine was Ryan Caldwell. So Ryan Caldwell was a second row for Ulster, covered in tattoos. Would be totally someone I just thought, oh, this fella's cracked, or you know. Ultra aggressive. He was ultra aggressive on the field. He'd always be scrapping and digging. And I would have got to room with him in Irish camps. And he was just a gentle soul. I know he had problems after he retired, but he's on the right track now. But yeah, he was someone that I just didn't think I'd have anything in common with, or wouldn't have any interest in kind of things I was interested in, farming or whatever. And it was totally the opposite. An absolute gent, really. It is his image. Or what maybe it was naivety on my part, but certainly it wasn't just the tattoos and it was the way he played. I just thought he was, he just had no real interest in anything bar Ulster or Ulster people. And he was actually a gent.
Johnny, I thought you were actually just abandoning the podcast for a second there. You just didn't want to answer the question at all.
No, I didn't want to answer. I heard a child crying, so forgive me for looking after my own. But no, it's actually funny because I don't have anyone on the top of my head that I would have had like no
all the Limerick lads basically was this
absolutely every single one of them. But no, there's definitely you read people so differently when they're against you, and like you know these kind of like Owen Farrell now, for example, haven't played against them, but there was a time where you would have said as a Munster person like God the worst are worse. But then as you could I have a real interest in Owen Farrell, like what a competitor and a leader. And you're thinking, surely if you play with him, he'd be the first guy that you want to be with. Like, but then there's guys, interestingly, like Andrew Conway came down from Leinster. And I remember like he was the Leinster school's superstar. And I was so taken aback by the conversations I had with him. Like he was so bought into Munster and how down to earth he was, how like genuinely happy he was to be down at Munster took me by surprise, you know. So there was one or two things like that. And this is probably a smaller story, but we played Leinster in the Aviva, and I remember thinking like Johnny Sexton wasn't Raj like from my whole upbringing, do you know what I mean? And you were Team Raj and all this, and then this was 2016. He was World Player of the Year in 2018. It would have been going towards top of his game, and a very small moment that he didn't have like at the end of the game, which shook hands and he said, "Well done, Johnny." Like, and I was going to go on. I think I said this to you before, but like. Did not need to let me know that he knew anything about me or whatever it was. And there's sort of small moments like that, you realise that people aren't actually what you portray them to be as an opponent. And most rugby people will get on like, won't they?
Yeah. And it is, I know it can be a bit cliched just about all the various countries coming together and the different cultures and things like that. And players go from beating the heads off each other in a Six Nations to being arm in arm a few months later. But it just is one of the things I love about the Lions, and particularly maybe on the all the DVDs you would have seen over the years, just of the little friendships that are forming along the way. And I have enjoyed the stuff that the Lions have been putting out on YouTube over the last couple of weeks as well. I might mention a little bit later because there's stuff they're leaving out that I would love to see in it. But there are a few lovely little nuggets in it. And
they were the DVDs, like when they were a DVD, you'd love watching them. They came out ages after. Now you get kind of live stuff on YouTube, but you'd be very surprised at the bromances they come out, wouldn't you?
You really would. Like, I don't know, did in the various Ireland camps you would have been in over the years, Bernard, were there any unlikely friendships you saw develop?
It changed so much. So back at the start, like, you go into City West under Eddie O'Sullivan on a Sunday night for dinner for the week's training, and the Munster lads would sit together, the Leinster lads would sit together. I was Connor at the time, so I didn't really have many fellas to sit with, so I just go wherever there was a gap. But then it did break down, you know what I mean? And the likes of Raj was incredibly tight with Shaggy and Draco and all those lads, and they became nearly a team. Obviously it's Team Ireland, but the provincial biases and parochialism, you know, fell away, and that started the upturn in probably Irish rugby international level. I suppose the worst roommate ever was Eric Miller. Like, he was a disaster. He'd turn off the TV at 9 o'clock at night if you wanted to go to bed. You weren't even allowed to read a book or whatever. Just unbelievably selfish. But and a roommate, I actually was with him last night at a charity event. The roommate I would have loved to have had for a while was Mick Galway. On my first tour with Ireland in South Africa in 97, 98, I was only 20. And Don Lennon was the team manager. And we pulled into the Holiday Inn in Cape Town at Newlands. And Don Lennon got up, because obviously to make sure that the check-in is quicker, the room keys are always ready when you go in on a table. So Don Lennon read out the room list. I was only listening for my name, and I think 102 was Mick Galway, Bernard Jackman. I was like, deadly. A week with Mick Galway in Cape Town, I'm going to grow up. You know what I mean? Like, I'll be a man of the world by Saturday. And anyway, go down to the room. Mick gets his bag, throws into the corner. Puts on a pair of boxer shorts, jumps on the big bed. There's always a big bed, small bed, and puts on Judge Judy or something like that. And I'm packing my bag and unpacking, hanging up shirts and all that stuff. So it takes me about 10 minutes to make a sniggering away anyway. But just before I hopped onto the small bed to watch Judge Judy with Mick, I noticed the door was on the latch, and I was like, Mick, will I lock the door? He goes, oh no, it'll be fine or whatever. So I'm on the bed about 2 minutes. Next thing, boom, the door's kicked in. Who arrives? Only Peter Clossy with his two bags. Gets his room key, throws on my bed, and goes, fuck off, Jackman, right? So so basically, it turned out that Don Lennon or the team, and this happened all throughout the lad's career, no matter who the manager was. They'd ring the hotel in advance and say, what are the two rooms furthest apart? And they'd split the two lads, whatever, thinking that that'll keep them quiet. But sure, invariably, the two lads just moved in together anyway. So I had to repack a lot quicker than I unpacked anyway, and do the walk of shame to my new room, which was 840 something. Knocked on the door, not knowing who I was with. Anyway, I ended up with Trevor Brennan, which was an experience as well for the week. So there's some good characters, and you do, like, that week. You spend more time with them than you normally, like, you probably would with your wife at home, because when you're at home, you're doing other things. You know what I mean, and on a tour, there's so much downtime. So. Look, it's no surprise Ellis Genge. I know Ellis Genge was brilliant in the match, but I also, I think his personality and character is someone that Farrell will really like. You know, he's an Andy Farrell type player, because he's very old. And Sheen, to be fair, and I hope this is what you feel as well, Neil, or contradict me if you don't. But Sheen is probably one of the more interesting Irish lads in terms of when we do get access to him. He's not as guarded as others, and he's a great fella, but he's also interesting in terms of giving you little insights like that, and not being afraid to say it how he sees it or was.
Yeah, and he'd be comfortable to say that and know that everyone's taking it at face value, and not really that he probably actually did think Ellis Genge was a dickhead. Johnny, before we move on to the actual rugby stuff, any good bad roommates down the years at Munster?
Simon Zebo was interesting, because you just had no control over what was going to happen. Music would come on at 11 o'clock, because that's when his day starts at p.m. so, like, what I actually was going to say, Zebo and Rory Best was the most surprising one to me. They're I said it to him recently. I was like, how have you and Rory Best been good buddies? Like, and that became the cartel, if you remember their social media.
Oh, yeah.
That was always really interesting for me. But I can't really remember a massive moment. But Zeebo, I remember saying with him in Limerick and being like, my life is not my life at the moment. He's going to do what he wants and I'm going to fall into that. You know, so it's like, as Bert said there, sometimes it's funny when you're in hotels, like you are like a married couple, like, we go into the team room, yeah, hang on for me there. And you literally walk down the hall together. Like, you can't just go and meet them in the hotel, in the team room that's downstairs. Like, you know, you do everything. You're going out for a coffee, you're going out for a walk or whatever. You end up just living in each other's pockets if you have the right roommate. So it's, you do get to know them fairly quickly, like, in their habits and everything else.
Absolutely.
Listen, yeah, and there's another roommate just that I used to get put with quite a bit was John Hayes, because obviously the Fireman link, and Hayes is salt of the earth, like one of the nicest people. But I'd say Hayes has been around, was around the world 10 times, like on rugby tours, and he saw nothing. He said, like, he would have zero interest in leaving. I remember we were in Sydney, and I was like, come on, Hayes, we weren't far from the Sydney Opera House. Come on, come on. We'll go down and look, see the Sydney Opera. No. Like, all he saw was hotels and training pitches and stadiums. But like a great roommate, but just very funny. Just so comfortable just doing nothing and hanging around.
The key to a long career, some might say.
Exactly, yeah.
Listen, let's talk about the match on Friday. Argentina 28, Lions 24. Argentina had been 21 ahead at half time. Bundiaki had scored the Lions try in the opening half. A penalty try and then another for Tadhg Byrne put the Lions 24-21 in front. But then breakaway finish by Santi Cordero gave Argentina the win. Bernard, I know you were there at the occasion. Sold out match. I know there was plenty of talk around ticket prices and would the whole thing feel a bit too corporate. I don't know about you, but maybe the weather helped and everyone was in a good mood. But I thought the atmosphere was absolutely cracking on Friday night. I thought it was a brilliant occasion. The buzz around Dublin, not just for the evening, but I got down around the Aviva about 4 o'clock because I had a little bit of work to do. So I said I'd get into the stadium nice and early. But walking around Balls Bridge around 4 o'clock, so much colour, so much red Lions gear around. They must be making a fortune off the jerseys, I would say, because every second three quarters of the crowd probably had a new one. I thought from start to finish, it was a really, really brilliant occasion.
Yeah, to be honest with you, I was skeptical, or
I was too, 100%.
Yeah, you know, like, and to be honest, like, I was blown away by it, and like, it just shows how big this is. This, we've always known it's big, but it's even bigger than I thought it was. And like, corporate hospitality, I interviewed Gary Ringrose and Dan Sheen. And normally corporate hospitality people are, you know, semi-casual. There was nearly everybody was wearing a red jersey. Everyone was so excited to see two Lions come in. We wished them well for the tour. It was phenomenal. And then the match, I know there was no test caps awarded for it. And I think maybe that's a bit disrespectful to Argentina. I know why they want traditionally the test lines to be test lines on the tour, but the match wasn't far off test match intensity. Argentina played their role perfectly. They were maybe underpowered in certain areas, but they defended for their lives. They scrambled, they hit lines on the break, and then dogged it out at the end when they needed to defend their own goal line. Like, and that was far from the full strength Puma side, but every one of them take massive pride. I was in Puma's camp during the week, and like, Felipe obviously is now a coach, but Felipe was part of that generation whose cause was to put Argentina on the map and to be respected, if you remember. And they did that as players, and now his role as a coach is obviously he's obviously leading them to some scalps bigger than they've ever had before. Obviously beating the Rugby Nations teams last year, and obviously the other night was another milestone for them. But their cause now, and whether it's far-fetched or not, is to play a role in making Argentina become part of that cycle, and that the Lions would tour Argentina every 16 years. Now, you might say, oh, that's pie in the sky stuff, but that's what they were motivated by, to give the Lions such a good game. They didn't know if they could win, but they gave the Lions such a good game that they could see it as being a potential. And their argument around, because I said, oh, what about midweek matches? The provincial sides wouldn't be good enough, etc. The club sides wouldn't be good enough. And they were saying, well, we think, you know, Uruguay and Chile, etc., would be able to give the Lions as good a game as Western Force or whatever, you know. So I know they don't want to mess with what's already a successful model. But the reality is, how I look at it now is this R360 is talking about franchises and, you know, getting teams to go to certain cities. And I know it's eight teams, but like, you effectively have a franchise that is already absolutely loved and has history, legacy. So if you could sweat that a little bit more without devaluing it, I don't think a tour just making the other countries wait another block. I think a tour to Argentina could be incredibly exciting in its own right, you know, and develop the game in Americas, and also financially have to make sense for the four nations. But I just thought the occasion blew me away, and I'd love to be going out to Australia to be part of it. It's just, it's insane. I think for Farrell and the players, I think they now, the lads who haven't been Lions, they got a real eye-opener to how big it is.
Yeah. I'm glad you actually brought that up about the possibility of expanding the Lions cycle, I suppose, of countries you'd be visiting. Because I saw France mentioned as well, which would be unbelievable, I think, if that was to ever happen. I dug out a quote here from Ben Calverley, the CEO of British and Irish Lions. Says he was asked about France potentially or touring Argentina someday. He says there are different teams around the world that we might be interested in playing against in future. Traditionally, that's been consigned to a pre-tour element, Dublin, Murrayfield, etc. So we'll probably focus on that, is what he said. So, Johnny, like, you get the feeling that they're open to playing anyone, but if they're going to be playing the likes of an Argentina or a France, or I think he mentioned possibly Japan or Fiji as well, or someone like that as well. Japan, obviously, they played in 2021, but it would probably be pre-tour games rather than touring the country. I don't know what you think. As Bernard said, like, I wholeheartedly agree. I'd love to see Argentina coming onto the rotation, and France as well. I think they would be absolutely incredible. And it is the biggest brand in the game, the British and Irish Lions, by a distance. It's bigger than the All Blacks, as far as I'd be concerned anyway. I'd love to see it expanded and grow rather than just kind of settle on tradition as tradition. I mean, actually, you know, never mind tradition. The Lions have toured Argentina before, just a long, long time ago.
Yeah, I think it's funny because there's a part of me that's resistant to that change, because you're looking at what they have and you're talking about how good it is, and then you're playing with that. So like, if some people didn't like seeing it, and you know, not everyone's opinion is in their control, if some people don't want to see them going to Argentina, or if the tour wasn't as competitive as what it might be in the traditional strongholds in the Southern Hemisphere, then you know, you're taking a big risk with going there. But as Bernard said, you know, if you're done with growing the game in a certain area, going to France is one thing. Like, France are a huge nation, and I think the challenge of the test matches would be unbelievable to see. But like, logistically, when you can barely get a French-based player onto the tour as it is, you can see massive challenges with that, you know. So France is probably a million miles away. But going to Argentina, if you're going to change it, and there is massive risk with change and people are being resistant to change, if you are going to, they've certainly just given it a huge appetite because, you know, as Bernard was saying with the other countries around the place, if you can open up, I know they are playing rugby there and it is growing, and they're, you know, there's super rugby in Brazil or in South America or whatever it is. If you can really empower that and put money towards it and resource it and bring this franchise there, that's the draw from World Rugby's perspective. But if you were in control of the Lions and if you were the CEO there, you are really playing with fire, aren't you? Like, it worked out really well this time, but Argentina have probably flip-flopped over time. They've beaten us enough times to say that they've flipped more than flopped. But, like, you know, it would be really interesting. But then are you taken away from the fact that the other nations have to wait that bit longer? Like, we're talking about 12 years since they've been in Australia. Imagine going 16 years and, you know, there probably isn't a tourist that's gone to both or whatever it is, but even been involved in the game and they've gone to both. So I can see challenges with it. It makes a lot of sense if you're trying to grow the game. And Argentina seems perfect, that area of the world. But I would be less convinced, but then again, I'm probably more resistant than you and Bernard.
Well, I mean, if they were to throw in extra teams, you wouldn't be, like, if they see the money coming in, you wouldn't be surprised if they started shortening the windows to maybe Lions every 3 years or something, or started rejigging around with the how often they're doing it. But anyway, we'll park that one for now. We'll talk about the match itself. Bernard, I mentioned the stuff the Lions have been putting out on YouTube, and there's some really interesting nuggets in it. But as I said, the elements that I really, really wanted to see would have been what Andy Farrell said to his players in the change rooms after full time on Friday night, because I was in his press conference at the Aviva, and in whatever the 5 years that he's been in charge of Ireland, I've been at countless of his post-match press conferences, and I've never seen him go after his team like he did on Friday night. He wasn't remotely pleased with what he saw. I'm going to read out a few of the quotes here. He was even thrown maybe a couple of softballs around being able to kind of use an excuse of, you know, we've only been together a couple of weeks, there's rustiness there. But he wasn't even taking those. Exact quote, "I wouldn't give that excuse. We need to do better than that. The amount of balls that we threw blindly either to the opposition or floor is probably a standout. Combine that with the kicking game and the aerial battle. What is disappointing is scraps on the floor from that type of battle. It always seems to go to Argentina. There's a bit of fight and hunger from them that we can't accept." That is a snippet of 10 to 15 minutes of a press conference where he just completely went to town on them. I'd love to see what he was saying to the players after that match, because he clearly fired a warning shot across them.
Yeah, my understanding was it was very similar, maybe with a few more curse words in there. Like this is the thing about Andy Farrell. He's absolutely loved by anyone who works with him, but he's not a cuddly teddy bear. You know, he's able to be really soft. He's able to build relationships, to connect, and all that stuff. But he also expects and demands performance and results. And if you, there's no one more ruthless in the game if you don't live up to that. So we got a glimpse of it probably after that first test in South Africa, where, you know, I think the Irish players were shocked, because like the exit to New Zealand, which in the World Cup was the biggest setback he's had, but he understood that, okay, the players mightn't have executed everything as well as they would like, but the effort and the hunger and desire was there, and the performance was by and large pretty good. But I think what he saw the other night was a lack of respect for the ball and the scraps thing. Like, it's interesting. So watching Argentina train, they start every training session with some drills around the scraps, you know what I mean? And to get that 50-50 ball or the 40-60 ball and fight first. And then in the warm-up, actually watching them warm up, again, that was an area that they built into the warm-up, which you get watching most teams warm up. It's not something that they need to warm up or practice on. It's a given or whatever. So, that was the one that will hurt them, because it was a desire thing. I actually think some of the passes that went to ground, etc., is down to a lack of understanding, a lack of cohesion, a lack of timing together, new partnerships. And the Farrell attacking model, it is quite complex. You know what I mean? It's effectively, to actually manipulate a defender, everybody has to be in the right place, the right running line, the right timing, and that can open up holes. And in fairness to them, they did execute that quite well with 16 entries into the opposition 22, which again is, like, Andy Farrell teams tend to be very high in that stat, and they just didn't capitalize on it. But what we did see was really loose offloading, kind of a lack of real hunger. I thought the try the Argentinian scored that would have frustrated them most was the one just before halftime, where Duan Vandermeer lose the ball at the ruck and they go 60. But what would have annoyed them was the lack of scramble. So, like, yeah, Argentina had four or five players. It was behind the goals, the camera view. The four or five players busting ass to get there. And there was very few lines, you know, having the same attitude to get back. So he sees those things as red herrings. And they would have had, like, a really nice camp in Portugal, a really nice week in Dublin. But the responsibility for all that nice stuff and investment and support is you go out and put your body on the line and you respect the ball or whatever. Now, I also think, to be fair, it looked like they went into the game with a game plan that was geared towards trying to practice their attack. And so they weren't as kick focused as the Pumas. Obviously, you know, they had 60% possession. Now they had 70% territory. So they dominated all those things. But I think maybe the message from the coaching was, go express yourself, you know, don't die wondering. And maybe the players thought that gave them a license to play sevens rugby, which, to be fair to Farrell teams, they don't play sevens rugby. They like to attack, but it's very, very structured and very controlled. So maybe he just needed to give them a reminder of that. And also, I would say he's conscious that that's probably as hard a test as they're going to get for a little while. You know what I mean? So he may be given the next bollocking on the back of a 30-point win, and it won't have the same opportunity to impact. But they all know now that he's not a cuddly bear, and there's an onus to perform as well.
Absolutely. Johnny, Bernard mentioned the kicking game there and how the Lions weren't necessarily kicking a lot, but how did you feel they did when Argentina were kicking to them?
Yeah, I was actually wondering about, it's very hard to see on the TV, you know, so you don't have the angles you want, but I was wondering about Marcus Smith's positioning. He got caught once or twice with kicks that went downfield. And I thought the kick battle was something that really struck me, that the Lions didn't win. Now, I was surprised when he went after the scraps, because, and people are going after Mauro Itoje, but Mauro Itoje actually won two balls on the ground in the first 20 minutes, and then the Lions stopped winning them. So that was the first thing that I noticed about Mauro Itoje, because I watched the game and I was thinking, that's what people see in him. Like, you know, he's a presence, he's a line-out, he's all that. And then he was scraps and he was divilment, like, and then, yeah, he probably fell off a small bit. So I saw him winning one or two bits, but there were scraps because they weren't winning the ball in the air. And I said it to you there beforehand that I think you can't play back that, I wouldn't say back three again, but probably back three. Tommy Freeman's good in the air. Marcus Smith is obviously not a fullback that's going to claim ball in the air, but it's actually more so Duo van der Merwe being on the left wing, wasn't it? That's the James Lowe role. And I said to you, if Finn Smith is going to be caught in the backfield, there's going to be ball put up in him. And it's not because he's not decent in the air. Like, I've played out half where you're going to be in the backfield and sometimes you go up and claim it and you're delighted with yourself, and other times you lose him and you're thinking, I'm not a full back. But like, you just need to win that space, and it depends on the opposition and all the rest of it. But you just can't play that back three, because Australia are going to kick the ball onto them and they have athletes that will win the ball back. So what struck me is that, you know, Duane van der Merwe is unbelievable in attack. Now, I agree with that one where he lost the ball before half time. He's not even turned back towards his own goal at the time he lost the ball. It was really sloppy contact skills, which you wouldn't expect from him because he's such a physical player. But if you play James Lowe in the left wing position with his exit strategy, as they do with Ireland, then he's going to be the one in the backfield. And we've seen James Lowe not only gather the ball in the backfield, but he's doing it overhead like a GAA player. He's obviously practiced that skill quite a bit. So if you allow him to take the exit strategy, they can kick off 9 or off traditionally 10, which is going to be their winger. Then the 10 goes into the kick chase line and Finn Smith is protected a bit more from his aerial battle. And James Lowe takes that role with a Kinghorn or a Keenan on the other side of the pitch, taking the other side of the kick battle, covering more ground than what I believe Marcus Smith would have covered. Now, Marcus Smith, like, I've seen the videos on YouTube, like you said, I'd have a very big interest in him anyway as a player. And I've seen his effort when there were breakaways. He was turning from one guy and he was breaking himself, trying to make up ground that he was never going to make up. So I believe the way he plays the game, he must be a fit player. But at the same time, there's a fitness as an out half and there's a fitness as a real fullback. And I think Keenan and Kinghorn's range as well, they're going to cover that ground so differently. So if you put, I actually like Tommy Freeman. I thought he was most of the battle in terms of losing the ball and contact. He lost a couple in the 22, which Andy Farrell won't like, and that they're real wasted opportunities. I actually agree with Bernard. I was watching the game thinking they must have been told to express themselves, because when you said, it wasn't a test match and it was disrespectful, the reason it didn't feel like a full test match is because they threw too much ball away. That does not happen in a Six Nations game or a World Cup game or whatever it is. But long story short, I think if you're going to play, you have to change that back three to win the kicking battle, whether it's being kicked to you or you kicking to them. I just don't think it worked.
Thoughts on that, Bernard?
Yeah, I agree. And to be fair, like, Argentina saw that as an entry point into the game. Marcus playing fullback, Duan under the boat, and Freeman to a lesser extent, but he had a poorer game in that area than he normally has. I still think he has a chance. I think he has a chance of being a test line because of his pace and his finishing power. I think Duan will struggle. I think he'd struggle in the Andy Farrell method because it's not straight line running and finishing. Now he would have had a try if Marcus had put him away. I think he would have scored from there in the 22 when Ty Burn eventually scores anyway, so it didn't have an effect on the result. But I think Farrell's wingers have to be nearly playmakers and have a really high work rate. I thought Marcus missed an opportunity because, not that I'd ever saw him being the test line fullback, but I thought he had a cracking chance of being on the bench, and he still might, you know, obviously if he can go in and play fullback or 10 and show what he can do there. But in fairness to him, and I agree with you, Johnny, he was out of position a little bit. But I think the Argentinians did starve him of the type of ball he likes, which is, you know, long kicks to him where he can look up and go identify a front five forward and go step him. So they made it so uncomfortable for him. And yeah, and by the end, he was punched drunk. You know, he was chasing shadows, really.
On that one, just to go on to Marcus Smith, I don't know their defensive system, so I can't say that he was wrong. But when you look at behind the goal when they scored in the far corner, Freeman got their fold was really poor in the corner, which meant Freeman was really narrow, and Marcus Smith backed off. And I was thinking, Keenan's not backing off there. So I'd love to know the defensive system and why Marcus Smith tried to back off.
To be honest, Johnny, based on that game, I couldn't tell you. Yeah. You know what I mean? It was very clear. It was very clear how they were going to try and attack. So, like, this was the question. Would Farrell come in and try and find a hybrid attacking philosophy or attacking shape that takes in a mixture of what England do, what Ireland do, because they're the two teams that are dominating. Now, in fairness, there's lots of Scottish backs. Sorry, that's harsh. A mixture of the three of them, because there is Scottish backs who would be in the test team or test pitcher. But what I saw was Andy Farrell's Ireland attacking system being played by lots of lads who aren't used to it, right? Because obviously Leinster players were by and large unavailable. But defensively, it wasn't that clear, to be honest. Like Tommy Freeman, as you say, got caught narrow. Then he tried to blitz, you know what I mean, and come in and made it worse. So, but because obviously the Lions had 60% possession, and because Argentina, when they scored, they scored quite quickly, you know, scored off transition, turnover. We didn't really get a chance to see, sustained periods of Lions defense where you could go, right, that's how they're going to defend. So, and in fairness to Easterby and how Ireland defend, like it's not a kind of an extreme system. It's not an extreme drift. It's not an extreme blitz. But again, that backfield positioning, decision making, and understanding what happens in with closing, etc. I suppose that'll become evident over the next couple of weeks. But yeah, the problem for the Lions was any error they made defensively was exploited ruthlessly by Argentina, and their speeds, their skill sets, and their awareness, I thought, was exceptional. And you know, lads who are playing in for two average enough franchises in URC, you know, Mendy, Garcia, and Albornoz were absolute class. It was great for Santiago Cordero, obviously without a club at the moment, to come on and get the winning try. Like, there's some real talent in that Argentinian team.
Yeah, it is. It's mad how in the last 10, 20 years they've just changed completely from what Argentinian rugby was in the 90s or early 2000s, with just kind of big forwards and a massive scrum. Now they're just electric backs, and they probably don't even have the scrum anymore, which actually leads me to what we're going to talk about, like the few positives that were out there. One of those was definitely the scrum burners. Like Ellis Genge and Ben Bielan went to town on Argentina in that for that first 50 odd minutes as well, and the subs who came on kind of carried that for the most part as well. That is a nice position to be in. I know it's only one game, but that looked pretty solid.
Yeah, 100%. And like, you're right, though. I'm not overly convinced by Slavy. This Argentine scrum isn't what it was back in the day, but they were up there. The starting front row were ruthless. I think John Fogarty would be disappointed with the bench in terms of their ability to carry that on. Like, the referee already had a picture of his dominance. To the eye, the Lions were still going forward, but they weren't able to milk penalty advantages, Neil. So the Lions had to play away from it. And when you were in that battle at the end where you're chasing a 4-point deficit, they definitely could have done with having a penalty advantage to be able to go into the corner, because we saw their maul. They got a penalty try from a maul. Luke Cowan-Dickie should have scored from a maul. Like, that would have been the winning of the game when your offload game was causing you problems. And yeah, I think they'd be disappointed, because the backup Argentinian front row, you know, they're not world beaters, you know. The props, they were really worried in a week last week about what would happen in the last 20 minutes with their front row. So the starting front row can take massive credit. They put themselves in a real good position, and the lads off the bench, hard on Furlong, because I wouldn't judge him because he only came on, had to go off again with the HIA. But yeah, Genge in particular, I thought, had a massive game, and his carry and carries is his point of difference. And Andrew Porter is a very good carrier, and has a lot of, you know, is well able to carry a lot. But just recently for Ireland and Leinster, we haven't seen that real punch in his carries. That could be an area of difference for Genge or for Farrell when it comes to line selection, I think.
Yeah, whatever way that goes. And look, I don't want to discount Pierre Schoeman at the moment, but it probably does look like Porter and Genge are the leading two. Whoever starts and whoever would be on the bench there, that's a phenomenal 1-2 punch to be able to have at loosehead prop. Johnny, what other, before we finish up on the lines, what other players do you think did their cause for the next few weeks no harm whatsoever?
Yeah, it's a funny one, right? I suppose I was thinking about it differently and what you need to change. I do think I agree with Bernard that Tommy Freeman for me is a starter. You know, he made a couple of errors, but they were, if you could call them positive errors. He gets into such good positions. He's so powerful. He's very fast. The size of him, like, you know. So I still think he's a front runner for me.
I know what you mean. They're not really, really worrying mistakes.
No, you just give him a bit of a tap on the shoulder and say, hold on to that one, and we score in two phases time, like, you know. So he got into really good positions. I do think you're going to change one of those centres. I just think there needs to be a yin and yang. I think you need to have something slightly different. As far as I can see, I think if the full back, as I said, has to change. I don't know what's going to happen with the out half position. Finn Russell still for me would be the one, but I like Finn Smith's consistency. You know, I'd be a big fan of him. Ty Byrne obviously was very good. So yeah, I think it's like I told you his captain, so he's going to stay there. I think Dan Sheen is going to walk into the team. I thought without playing, he selected himself. I know the lineup was very tough actually. The timing was clearly off. And when Ronan Keller came on, I thought he was very good until the end and the overthrow. It just shows there's a timing issue and maybe it just needs time together. You know, so maybe it's hard and it's harsh on Luke Cowan-Dickie, but I did think straight away Dan Sheehan's going to walk into that team. James Lowe will have a very good chance of getting into that team. I'd love to see it balanced without being so Irish that Blair Kinghorn is also there, because I love Hugo Keenan, but Blair Kinghorn is such an athlete. And he's another guy with, from what I can see, like huge personality, good tourists playing in France, good brand of rugby. Like, he'd add massively to that team, you know. So it'll be very interesting where they go next, because even I was looking through the squad going, how's he going to get him game time and this guy game time before he actually gets into a full selection? Because those Australian club teams might not give him the answers, as Bernard alluded to earlier. Like, they might, he might not get a chance to really scold them or have a proper test or whatever it is. So it's going to be very hard to see the combinations. Gibson Park, like, I thought Thomas Williams was very good. You know, I think I like Mitchell and I like what he kind of does structurally in his kicking game and everything else, but his pace is different to the other two. And I think when Williams was flashing the ball across for those line breaks, he opened my eyes, actually, to be honest. I know he ripped up the Premiership and he got Player of the Year and everything else, but he still played in Wales, so people have that kind of negative connotation around what happened. But depending on Gibson Park's fitness, Williams is a bit of a dark horse for me.
Anyone you want to mention, Bernard, quickly, who...
Yeah, just it's Irish, but not caught the eye. Conan's stock went up by not playing. I just thought that balance in the back row didn't work. Ben Earls, obviously, they used him as a carrier off short lineouts, and he's well able to do that. But I think if he's going to be a test line, it won't be at eight if Conan's fit. So I thought Conan, stock, Dan Sheen, their shoe-ins. I'm fascinated to see this team with Finn Russell. I think he'd be very suited to the way they want to play, and it'll open up opportunities for him to make some line breaks himself. But look, at all in all, I think there's loads of positives from a Lions point of view. I think Farrell was right to be angry, but when he looks back at it, he can see a lot of those errors were on the back of some really good build-up play by the Lions, and that's the starting block to breaking down Australia in the month's time.
Isn't that, Bernard, as well? Neil, you spoke with the attacking game. It did, like, I'm sure it would be much easier for Andy Farrell to just pick Irish players, because you could see the timing of that they did a lot actually in their phase play with like a 4-2 or a disconnected one, and the timing was all over the place at times. And I don't want to be anti-English because I'm kind of just thinking back as I was watching it, were there fellas that have played a different system that just need to get up to speed? And if they get up to speed in training, fair enough, but if they don't, I think he will revert. And Conan was one I missed because I was thinking about that myself. Guys like that will know exactly what he's trying to do, and their timing will be better than their attack. Like Duan van der Merwe caught a ball way behind the shoulder at one stage, but if that was up in front of him, the hit runner was gone beyond. It was just not very threatening. But when you get the timing of that right, things happen on edges, you know. So unless they get forwards running into those spaces at the right time and disconnecting well and getting their spacings right away from the back, then he's just going to revert back to the guys that he knows, I would say, and it gives Irish guys a better chance of getting in.
Right, well, we'll see how that goes. They're playing the Western Force Saturday morning in Perth, 11 a.m. kickoff Irish time. I do want to talk, guys, about Ireland. We were out in the High Performance Centre in Dublin yesterday doing a bit of media. Mike Prendergast was up talking. They've had 37 players in camp for the last week or so. Five of those are just training panellists: Evan O'Connell, Brian Gleeson, Dermot Kilgallen, Jude Postlethwaite and Zach Ward. They won't travel to Tbilisi next week for the first for the test against Georgia, barring any injuries. Was interesting, Bernard. Mike Prendergast said that, well, number one, they hope to see everyone get some game time over those first two, over those two games. But interestingly as well, it seems like there's a detailed handover that's come from the coaches in Australia around the players they'd like to see and the positions they'd like to see them play in. He kind of said there's a bit of mix and match and a bit of wiggle room, but he said, you know, what's the line here? I suppose a bit of mix and match. Obviously, the senior coaches want to see certain players in certain positions. It's a bit of a shared job. As we come towards the weekend, there'll be dialogue over and back, he means to Australia. We'll respect every decision that'll be made. There's been some really good open conversations amongst us. Are you pleased to see that there is a kind of some level of hands-on still coming from the senior coaches who are away, and they're not really just kind of leaving this to the interim coaches?
Yeah, there has to be. This is an important a tour for Irish rugby to just let it go in its own right. I mean, let's not forget November, when the results were good, the performances were patchy enough. Obviously, the Six Nations finished third. The age profile of the Irish team, we do need new blood over this cycle. So this tour is massively important. And, you know, it's one thing Andy Farrell going, but the fact that now Goodman and Easterby and Sexton are also gone, head of SSC gone, head analyst gone, you would lose an opportunity. And the Lions is the biggest show in town, as you said, and it's brilliant that if you're supporting that, but not to the neglect of the next two or three years or more for Ireland. So delighted to hear that. Though I'm not surprised by it. I would have expected it, but it is. It's really important that the players are being tested in a game plan and a structure that is going to be aligned to what Farrell wants to do long term, and that also he's getting to pick the players that he sees being part of the future or short and long term. So no, that's great to hear.
And Johnny, with so many uncapped players in there, or players who are either in their first Irish camp or maybe second or third Irish camp, who don't really know the ins and outs of everything, how much responsibility do you think falls onto someone like Craig Casey as captain, but also players in there, like I'm looking through the list here, Ryan Baird, Keane Prendergast, Sam Prendergast, Jack Crowley, others in there, Stuart McCluskey, Jamie Osborne. Some of these people who aren't necessarily seasoned veterans, but who have been in and around camps for a few years, to raise those standards and take on maybe a bit more responsibility than they'd previously have had, to make sure that that everyone in that squad is reminded that this is a senior squad, this isn't Ireland A, this isn't your province, this is a level above.
Yeah, it's interesting because I'm looking through the group there as well as you're saying it, and no one will blow you away with doing the caps that they've had. And they're just unlucky not to be on the Lions. Like your leaders are going to come from people who have lower caps, you know, so it'll be interesting to see. There's a couple of guys that I think will have to really come of age for when people come back, that they're still part of the Irish squad, that have been very unlucky. So like, you know, between Keane Prendergast, Cormac Isichukwu, Ryan Baird, obviously, like Ryan Baird is well got within the camp, but like, who's going to be the six? Which one of those backs, Max Deegan, you know, should have so many more caps? Like, these kind of guys that you would have expected, when you look at the numbers besides their names, you'd actually be very surprised at some of them, because you think like they've been there and you'd say they should have had more caps and they just don't. So it's probably the opportunity for those guys. I actually think Tom Stewart is a guy that needs to get back into that hooker jersey. I think he was very close at times, and this is probably the opportunity for him to remind everyone that he is next. You know, he would have been challenging Kelleher, and Sheehan were injured at different times. I just think he's too good. He needs to be in the actual mix when everyone comes back. But likewise, you're looking at your Craig Casey, Jack Crowley and Sam Prendergast, I think will carry a lot of tactics and leadership. But also Frawley, is now the time that he shows them, you know, he has everything that to say that they've made mistakes in the past. I actually think it's a big tour for guys like that as well. I was interested, like, there's obviously a team dynamic that goes with it. You can't just bring all these barely capped guys. You need lads that are going to carry your tactics, carry your environment. And I just wonder, is that Stuart McCluskey? Because, you know, I know I've been vocal on it, but like, Jude Postlethwaite is a long-term answer to our midfield. I believe that. And then you're thinking, he's a training panelist and Stuart McCluskey's going back in. It'd be very easy to swap them around if you're thinking about the future, but you actually do need guys that are going to bring it together and control your camp for you, who aren't coaches. So I wonder, is there an element to that too?
Yeah, and McCluskey specifically was name-checked by Prendergast as one of those players who is taking on a lot of that kind of, I don't want to say burden, but responsibility to drive those standards up. We're going to finish up with, I didn't tell you we were doing this before the start, but we're going to pick our team, our 15, to play Georgia. We'll go through it position by position. I've got the squad list here. It can be a collaborative effort. We can vote together on it as one RT Rugby Podcast team. So starting at loose head prop, Jack Boyle, Michael Milne and Paddy McCarthy. Who's starting loose head prop? We don't have to have big discussions on all of this, but gut feeling.
Boyle.
That's me.
Jack Boyle? Yeah, Boyle. Okay, so I think that was an easy one to start. We've Jack Boyle at loose head. Hooker, Gus McCarthy, Tom Stewart, Stephen Smith.
I'd like to see Tom Short.
Bernard?
Yeah, I wouldn't have any issue. I wouldn't have any issue with Tom Short. I do think I think he's got a huge amount of potential and just been a little bit unlucky in terms of the team he's been playing for and the injuries he's had. So yeah, I'd have a look at Tom Short.
All right. I would have gone for Gus McCarthy, but 2-1 gets the Tom Stewart vote. Tight head prop then. Tom Clarkson, Jack Ainger, Tom O'Toole.
I think it'll be Thomas Clarkson. But again, I think Tom O'Toole is that guy that has run out of steam recently with unavailability, and he's due to come back in. So whether he's seen as the senior guy to go and get his position and develop that tight head position, I'm not sure. Bernard, to you.
Yeah, on form it's Clarkson. Mm-hmm. He was excellent the last few weeks, but I'd have no issue with Tom O'Toole getting another chance there. I think he's been unlucky and served his time.
Yeah, I think I'd be voting Tom Clarkson on that just based off the end of season form and the good run he had. I think it's probably a good reward. And, you know, there's a second game. Tom O'Toole will get his chance. In terms, second row is interesting because there's so many second rows in there that are kind of the hybrids, like Tom Ahern, Cormac Izichukwu, Ryan Baird as well. So in terms of second row, out Tom Ahern, Cormac Izichukwu, Ryan Baird, Dara Murray look like the second row options. What's your two there? Now, bear in mind, if you want to kind of hold one of those back for a back row option, yeah, fair enough as well. But what's the second row combination that jumps out there?
I'm going to keep Baird as a six, so I'm going to go Izichukwu and Tom Ahern.
I can deal with that. I was thinking Tom Ahern and Tom Ahern is going to be there, and Ryan Baird is going to be there, but there's only one six between them. So yeah, if they're going to see Tom Ahern as a long-term second row, they actually haven't really picked second rows besides Dara Murray. So they're obviously going very hybrid here. So I'd agree with Bernard. I think if Tom Ahern is going to go into the second row because Ryan Baird is a six, you could reverse that as well. And Cormac is a two. It's actually a very difficult one because they haven't made it clear in their selection, but I'll agree for now because that's not a bad selection.
I was leaning that way as well. And I've just been very, as much because I've been very impressed with Ryan Baird at six in the last few weeks as with Leinster as well. So let's go to the back row then. We've Ryan Baird, we're going to include in this row as well, but also then Gavin Coombs, Max Deegan, Alex Kandelan, Cian Prendergast, Nick Timoney. I'm sensing Ryan Baird at six is the consensus call already, is it?
Yeah, for me anyway. And I'd go Coombs at place.
I'd probably see Timoney playing at seven, and then I wonder, where's Cian Prendergast's stock? Will they play him at eight, or are they going to give Gavin Coombs his chance? So I'd say it's a shootout between the two of those at eight, with Nick Timoney at seven. I'd like to see Coombs there after all that time.
Yeah, and just on that, Johnny, you're right. So the Irish management did ask Connacht to play Prendergast at eight at the start of last season. They want him to be seen as more than a six. I just think this is a massive. I know Coombs has been out of the squads. You know, Prendergast has been there much ahead of him, but I don't know. Coombs' season he's had for Munster. I wouldn't mind seeing him get an opportunity at eight, and whatever question marks they have about him, to let him go and prove them wrong or prove them right.
And for this
I
year,
agree. I think it depends on how Coombs has been training, and we can't see that behind closed doors, but. The Cian Prendergast leadership role, and I think he's so ready to be part of that team. He just hasn't had the opportunity. So I wonder will they keep going with that development? They give him the chance at eight, but I'd love to see Coombs, like if not now, like, and they're just not going to do it. So I'd love to see Coombs get the opportunity.
Yeah, I'd be leaning Coombs just for Georgia and that physicality, I think, and see probably Prendergast on a bench. Scrum half, Craig Casey. Ben Murphy and Nathan Doak. I think, are we assuming Craig Casey's captain?
Yeah, it's easy. Yeah,
he's going to be there. That's the easiest option there. Out half, the fun one as always, Jack Crowley, Sam Prendergast, Kieran Frawley. I'll stick my head on the line first. I just think based on form at the moment, I think Jack Crowley's earned his shot back in that jersey.
I'm backing that up. I don't want to Johnny Sexton's point, let's agree and not put them against each other anymore. But I just think on form, I think Jack deserves a chance, but I don't want to start the argument, Bernard. We'll have different
ways. No, I thought Sam had a good final, which is important for him because it was a bit patchy before that, but I think they'll both get one each in his tour, and they'll both get one each.
The most important one, though, isn't it?
Yeah, Jack can play against Georgia, or should play against Georgia.
All right, we're on to the centres then. We've got Stuart McCluskey, Jamie Osborne, Hugh Gavin, and I'll include Kieran Frawley in here as well, just because he's the versatile option as well. Is Stuart McCluskey a banker for 12?
I think so.
To have that experience out on the pitch?
Yeah.
Otherwise, you weren't bringing him. I think that's the one where you can keep it together at the start. You know, when the game does go a bit loose, like we saw with the Lions, like he's the guy that's going to have to be in the middle of it, 10 people.
Yeah.
Right, so we're going McCluskey 12 at 13. Who do we like? Hugh Gavin, Jamie Osborne.
Hugh Gavin.
Kieran Frawley.
Yeah, I think that there's no out and out 13. Is there? Is Gavin more? Yeah. Is Osborne going to just pick up that role, or is he going to be a back three player? He has to start, does he?
No, you could. Now, if you want as well, you can start looking around the back line and looking at Tommy O'Brien, who's played a little bit at centre over the years. Jimmy O'Brien, who's played in the centre.
No,
I don't know.
No,
if
no.
You,
it's Osborne ahead of them.
Yeah, I pick Osborne ahead of them. So I think Hugh's been tried a little bit at 13 for Connacht. Jamie Osborne could fit in the back three just as easily. I don't see him as being a 13 long term, so they may want to have a look at Hugh Gavin. I'd have a look at Hugh Gavin.
Okay, we'll go Gavin. Then on the left wing, well, the wings, we can figure out as we go along. The wing and back three options, Shane Bolton, Calvin Nash, Jimmy O'Brien, Tommy O'Brien, Jacob Stockdale, and any of those other backs you want to throw in there from earlier as well. We'll start on the left wing.
Stockdale.
The form call this season.
It's a form call, and it's also the left-footed option that they have. It has to be him. I don't see it being anyone else. And then I think Tommy O'Brien, Calvin Ash would be very hard done by here, but like Tommy O'Brien has to be in anything that's picked at the moment.
Yeah, agree.
Just about lean that way as well. And then our full-back. So left over, we got Shane Bolton, Calvin Nash, Jimmy O'Brien.
Well, Jimmy's the
or
fullback.
Or Frawley.
No.
Or Osborne.
I think it depends on what you do with Osborne, because otherwise it's Jimmy O'Brien. It just depends on where they pick Osborne.
Yeah. But I just on his tour, they will want to look at Bolton, and obviously the Nash's is tried and tested. But I think if they're looking to discover new talent, they'll want to have a proper look at Bolton. They're excited by him. Is my understanding of it. Different profile than what we have with the others. Like just a real power athlete. So be fascinating to see him at the next level up. But I think Jimmy O'Brien and Jamie Osborne are fullback.
It's mad, actually, when you think about the wing options in other positions like second rows. You're wondering who the second row is. The wingers are stacking up there all of a sudden. Yeah. They all deserve a shot. And like Calvin Nash, if he doesn't start, that'll be a travesty because he's been so good. Yes, and another team, another province, there's another winger that's been absolutely outstanding. Like, so it's a brilliant problem for Ireland to have.
Yeah, and just given we've so many players away with Ireland or with the Lions, like when you actually go and try and select that starting team, there's plenty of competition, isn't there? You know, but the challenge is that those lads that we're talking about, Tom Ahern, you know, Isichuku, Prendergast, Ryan Baird, like one of them needs to just grab this now and be a likely starter for November against the All Blacks in Chicago. Like that's the difference. There's lots of really good talent there. It's just who's going to push on and be the next, you know, Peter Mahoney, James Ryan.
And you look back to 2021 and the people who got their chance and took their chance in those games against USA and Japan. It's going to be really interesting to see how that goes over the next couple of weeks. So our starting team to play Georgia in Tbilisi on Saturday week. Front row, Jack Boyle, Tom Stewart and Thomas Clarkson. In the second row, Cormac Isichuku and Thomas Ahern. In the back row, Ryan Baird at number 6, Nick Timoney at 7 and Gavin Coombs packing down at number 8. Craig Casey and Jack Crowley in the halfbacks. We've got Stuart McCluskey and Hugh Gavin in the centre, Jacob Stockdale and Tommy O'Brien on the wings. And we didn't decide between Jimmy O'Brien or Jamie Osborne at fullback. I'm going to cast the deciding vote and I'm going to say Jamie Osborne at fullback.
Yeah,
so
that's fine.
Give us your feedback in the YouTube comments or wherever you want to find us. Keep it clean, though. That's all I say. Be kind on us. We're putting ourselves out on a limb here and we'll see how that team goes. And how many of those make Paul O'Connell's selection next week. Bernard, Johnny, it's been great as always. Thanks a million for joining us on the podcast and we'll speak to you again soon.